So, hi, I'm Sarah Micklejohn, and today I'm going to be talking about privacy-preserving electronic toll collection, and in particular, we're going to be looking really closely at what happens when drivers start colluding within the system, and what kind of honesty can we still guarantee. And this is joint work with my collaborators at UCSD, Keaton Mowry, Steve Checkaway, and our collective advisor, Hovav Shakam. All right, so sort of what's the motivation behind this work? Well, if you've spent all your time on this coast, you might not be so familiar with what's going on, but anyone on other coasts knows this awful scenario, right? So driving up to a toll plaza can oftentimes be very unpleasant. You know, there's a long line of cars to deal with. You're sitting there idling. Maybe it's hot out, and it's very frustrating. So fortunately, at least 15 or 20 years ago, there was sort of a way introduced to deal with this, at least for drivers. And this is Easy Pass, right? And Fast Track on the West Coast. And this at least gives you a dedicated lane that you can now drive through at presumably an accelerated pace, right? Because there's this transponder in your car that's communicating with something in the toll plaza that says, like, don't worry, I'm gonna pay for this later. And you know, you don't have to have exact change and stuff like that. So that's great for the driver. It turns out, believe it or not, that toll plazas are also not really the ideal scenario for the person trying to collect your money either. And that's because really they don't give you any flexibility, right? So you collect the money at the toll plaza, and that's all you get. You collect that one fixed fee. So in particular, one question is, well, how do I try to charge more according to the time of day, right? So again, you could imagine trying to fix this. For example, I have maybe just a list of prices at the toll plaza rather than one price, but this is quickly going to get kind of complicated, and drivers are going to sort of get more frustrated, so that's not great. And then something that's a lot less obvious how to fix is how do I charge more as drivers are entering city centers, right? So a lot of cities have been talking about doing this. It turns out, you know, there's a big difference between putting a toll plaza when you want to enter Manhattan and putting a toll plaza up if you want to enter, say, Times Square, right? You can't exactly expect to have this sort of structure everywhere you want to charge more money. So this has been solved, not in the US, but in the UK. So that sign might be a little hard to read. All it says is this big red C. Then it says central zone to indicate that you're in, entering one of the central zones of London. And then it says congestion charging. This sign doesn't say the price, but presumably you either know or it's posted somewhere. So this is great, and it really does answer this question that I had about how do you do this. Unfortunately, the way in which it's done is putting cameras everywhere, right? So you have all these cameras as you enter the city center, and they have automatic license plate readers that then read your license plate and send you a bill automatically. So from a privacy standpoint, this solution is less than ideal. And so in particular, what we're really seeing here is this core tension, right, between drivers who want privacy. Just because you're hopping in your car doesn't mean you want, you know, Easy Pass to now know everywhere you drive. And this desire on the collection side for more flexible toll pricing. And so that's sort of what we'll see in this work is a solution to this. So we'll see our system, which we call Milo. And this system allows for both fine-grained toll pricing policies, but without having to sacrifice drivers' privacy in the process. And then one other thing I need to mention, so in any privacy-preserving application, we always sort of have this other tension, right, which is between privacy and honesty. So, you know, in particular, the sort of naive private solution here would just be, well, the Easy Pass website is going to contain, you know, a list of locations and times and a list of prices, and you can go to that website yourself, tally up your total, and sort of self-report, this is how much I owe, you know, I'll send you a check. And this has obvious problems as well, which is that drivers are just going to completely cheat the system if they feel like it. So another thing that I do that we do is we strongly guarantee that in this process, drivers are going to be forced to remain honest. Okay, so if you've been at this conference before, you might be saying, wait a second, this problem has been solved, basically. So in fact, there is sort of a lot of work in this line of research. And in particular, I'll focus on two papers, both of which appeared here. So 2 years ago, in 2009, we saw VPRIV by Popa et al. And I'll just sort of take you through at a very high level how this deals with those three points. So to obtain fine-grained tolling pricing policies, they essentially just divide up the road into these small segments. So kind of exactly what I described in this naive solution. And you now we represent segments as this tuple, where, when, to indicate that we care about both the location and the time. And so each of these segments is just assigned a price. Okay, in terms of privacy, they essentially say that as drivers upload their segments to the server at the end of the month, they're going to use Tor to do this, and Tor is going to guarantee that that process is anonymous. And then finally, for honesty, what they're going to do is say that we're going to use these random spot checks throughout the month, right? So we're going to have to sacrifice some degree of privacy. A camera is going to catch you, but hopefully at only a few small locations throughout the month. Okay, and then we use these random cameras as sort of these spot checks or audit protocols in which you're challenged to prove that you really did pay for that segment in which you were seen. All right, so that's VPriv. Unfortunately, asking every driver, say in the US, to hop on Tor now might introduce, as we just saw, some possible scaling issues. So in 2010, last year, PrettyP was introduced by Balash et al. To deal with this exact issue. So everything else is pretty similar, but the main difference here is with this privacy. So rather than have to use Tor to upload your segments, you now upload them directly, but the segments are sort of masked using cryptographic primitives such that they don't reveal the locations directly. All right, so that's sort of fixing up a privacy thing, and what we're gonna do is we're gonna really hone in on this honesty point. So all of these audits, in both these papers and most of the previous works, have this sort of challenge and response behavior. So they have the same structure. What is this? Well, we have the driver on the left, and then on the right, we're having some local sort of toll collection authority. So you can think of this as, you know, the county department of transportation, for example. As I mentioned, what's gonna happen is they're going to be operating some set of roadside cameras, some small network, and they're going to catch you, presumably, on one of these cameras at some point during the month, right? So they take a photo of you. And the way it works, as I sort of hinted at in both VPriv and PrettyP, is they just send you that photo directly, or they send you, you know, the information saying, here's where you were seen, here's when you were seen. And they now challenge you to prove that you paid for that, honestly. And so the driver does that. We will get to see a little of how that looks later. And that's sort of it. You know, the collection authority can either decide they believe them or not. So what's going on here? Well, the authority is really revealing directly to the driver the exact segment in which they were seen. And what that information communicates, more than just that, is I have a camera in that segment. And so in particular, this information is information that driver can now use in the future. They know that when they're in that segment, they better have their camera on. And perhaps more dangerously, if they know they're in a segment where they don't have a camera, where there is no audit camera, they know they can safely turn their transponder off and not get caught. So in case this seems sort of cynical, it really is going on today. So there's websites like this one, Photo Enforced, that map, as far as I can tell, every red light camera in the US. More than just red light cameras, speed cameras. There's also iPhone apps for, you know, telling you if you're driving into a speed trap. If some of you drove here today, you might be curious to know there's a red light camera right on Geary and Grant. You're gonna get fined $446 if you get caught running that. You know, some of the other cameras have even more detailed information than this. So sort of extending this into the future, we could imagine websites, crowdsourced websites that just map the location of every audit camera, and then you can just drive around safely, you know, flipping your transponder on and off at will. So what we're gonna do is prevent against that with our system Milo. So in particular, we build right off of PrettyP, so we have the same policy and privacy structures, but in this, for this honesty point, we're going to guarantee that the audit protocol no longer reveals these locations directly to the driver, and so in particular prevents against this sort of collusion attack. Okay, so that's hopefully some motivation for why this is important and an idea of where we're going. In terms of a concrete outline, as I mentioned, PrettyP and us as well use some crypto, so I'll just briefly get us all on the same page. I'll then sort of talk about how that crypto gets integrated into our system. Then I'll give some performance and evaluation information, and then I'll just wrap things up with some conclusions. All right, so let's dive into the crypto. There's three primitives to get through, but I promise it's gonna be really fast. So let's start with commitments. So we're doing crypto. That means we're dealing with our two friends, Alice and Bob, as always. And to keep things sort of concrete, let's assume that Alice and Bob want to play a guessing game, okay? So Alice has some favorite number, it's 42, and she wants Bob to guess it. But, you know, maybe Bob doesn't really trust her, so in particular, he doesn't want to, you know, keep guessing forever and have Alice just lie to him if he guesses the right number. So what she does is she takes that number 42, she's going to stick it in an envelope. This envelope is going to be called the commitment. And let's assume she sealed that envelope in a very tricky way so that Bob can't open it without her help, all right? So she sends that over. Bob now has this envelope, and he now feels safe enough and starts guessing. And eventually, let's say he guesses 42. Alice can now send him this opening value to help him open the envelope, and he can do so and pull out this 42. Okay, so that's sort of what's going on. What was important here? So the first thing was this property we called hiding, which says that, well, Alice gave Bob this envelope at the beginning of the game, right? But we still want the game to be meaningful. We still want Bob to have to guess. So in particular, that envelope didn't reveal anything about the value inside of it, okay? And then the other property is called binding. And this says that, well, even if Bob doesn't trust Alice, sort of having that envelope guarantees that that value inside of it is what she says it is at the end, right? So in particular, she can't open up the envelope, stuff a different value inside, reseal it, and give it back to Bob and expect him to not notice, okay? So that's commitments. A related concept is zero-knowledge proofs. So again, let's continue with the guessing game. Bob has the commitment. Okay, but now it's taking too long. You know, he's guessing like every number in the universe, and it's a little boring. So Alice wants to give him a hint. So what she wants to prove to him is that the value in that commitment is between 0 and 100. So then he can restrict his guesses. So what she does, she forms this proof, pi. She sends it over to Bob. And Bob can now do some computations with this value and say, oh, okay, I believe you. And now he can know that he should only guess those values. All right, so again, there's sort of two properties we're interested in. The first, soundness, is related to binding. And this says that Alice can't convince Bob of something that's not true, right? So she can't just lie and have this proof convince him. And then the other property, zero knowledge, is related to the hiding property that we just saw. And this says that, again, just because Bob has this proof doesn't mean he learns anything about the number. So the proof reveals no information beyond the validity of that statement. And one kind of thing I do want to mention, zero knowledge proofs are much more powerful than this. You can actually form a proof for any statement in NP, but we really only need range proofs for this application, and so just this is all you need to know, I swear. Okay, so our final primitive is blind identity-based encryption. So this is probably the one people are least familiar with, so I'll first say what regular identity-based encryption is. So here, Alice is going to send an encrypted value, a ciphertext, over to Bob. Those of you who are familiar with public key encryption might think that this this public key looks a little strange. It just says Bob. That's sort of the identity in identity-based encryption. And this is very powerful, right? Because rather than have to go look up a public key, you know, this set of random numbers, and hope that that's really Bob's public key, Alice can just say, this is for Bob. Unfortunately, we can't actually realize this as is. We need this trusted third party, this key authority, to delegate keys. So what happens is, Bob can go to this key authority and say, I'm Bob, here's my public key, it's my name, Bob. And what he gets back is this secret key that this authority somehow derives. Okay? And now with this secret key, of course, it's just business as usual. In terms of public key encryption, Bob can decrypt that ciphertext he got from Alice. Okay, so that's regular identity-based encryption. Blind identity-based encryption is going to be fairly similar, one slight difference. So again, Alice just sends over that ciphertext. Now what's going to happen is when he wants his key, rather than revealing his key directly to the identity, Bob is going to somehow mask this. So one great way to think about this would be he uses a commitment to his public key, right, so that the information is still there, but it's hidden. And the authority now responds with some value. I won't really say how it's computed. And what's important is from that value, Bob can extract that same secret key he got before from that his response, and then he can just have that secret key, and it's the exact secret key he would have gotten before. Okay? So really, the fundamental difference here is just that the authority doesn't learn what keys are being extracted. And that's what we call blindness. All right? So that's the crypto. It's over. Now let's see how it gets used in Milo. So first, before I can get to Milo, I want to describe how electronic toll collection might work in general. And then I want to talk about PrettyP. And then I'll tell you sort of how we build on PrettyP to obtain Milo. Okay, so the first thing we obviously need in any toll collection system is a driver computing these segments, right? So we need to log these segments so the driver knows which ones to pay for. So this is done about how you would expect. So in this sort of unit that the driver is going to end up with in their car, there's a GPS, and so the driver can collect both GPS coordinates and GPS time information. So let's say they're driving along at some point, the GPS coordinate matches the start of some segment, let's say point A. Okay, they keep driving, and let's say, at some point the GPS coordinate matches this endpoint, point B, and they can now say, okay, well, I drove that segment, right? So remember, our segments are where, when. So the where here is from point A to point B, and the when information is, let's say, just how long it took. So if it took a minute or maybe under and we round up, that's what we log there. Okay, they keep going, point C, we log that segment, et cetera. Point D, we log that segment. So the idea is that at the end of the month, we have this whole list of segments that we've driven. So what are we gonna do with those? Well, so we have our driver. DP uses the acronym onboard unit, and we just use that to stay consistent. And the driver has all these segments that we just saw them logging. All right, so now is the time to involve a corporation like EasyPass. This is called the Toll Service Provider, or TSP for short. And what happens is the driver forms some sort of payment information. We'll see in a second what this might look like concretely, but for now, just remember that we're trying to have it maintain the privacy of these segments. And the driver now sends that payment information over to the TSP. The TSP just does what EasyPass does now, right? Which is check information, make sure everything's consistent, and then just charge the driver what they owe. All right, so that's that. We also need honesty, right? That's sort of the whole point. So for that, we have to introduce this Department of Transportation, which we can also think of as the TC, or toll collector. So what happens is the TSP can forward that payment information onto the TC, and the TC can now engage in this audit protocol with the driver, at the end of which they can sort of examine the outcome somehow. Again, we'll see in a second concretely, to ensure that the driver is being honest. All right, so that's very vague and high level. Let's see sort of this adapted version of PrettyP. So the payment information now is going to look like this set of commitments and proofs. So the commitments are going to be to the segment price, okay, so I commit to my price, and the proofs are going to be zero knowledge proofs that the values in those commitments are in the right range, so represent a proper price. And we'll see why that's important. So that information is sent over to the TSP. The first thing the TSP is going to do is verify that these zero knowledge proofs are valid, so make sure each one is proving that that commitment contains a valid price. And then using those commitments, again, I'll kind of gloss over how, the TSP can compute the total price and charge it to the driver's account. All right, that information can now be forwarded along to the TC, and now we can kind of remember how we saw things work at the beginning of the talk. So the TC saw the driver at some location, at some segment, that's where, when. They can send that segment directly over to the driver. The driver can now look for the commitment corresponding to that segment. Okay, so they can look through all of the things in their payment message, find the right commitment for that segment, and send back that commitment and its opening. Remember, the commitments were to prices. Okay, what the TC now wants to do is they want to first check, obviously, that that's the right commitment for that segment, that they didn't just pick some random commitment. The next thing they want to check is that that's the right opening for that commitment, so the commitment was opened properly. And then the final thing is, remember, the value inside of the commitment was a price, so given that price, they want to check that that was really the price that that segment was supposed to cost. Okay, so sort of going back to the crypto, why is this private? Well, the zero-knowledge properties of the proofs and the hiding of the commitment schemes guarantee that given those values, the TSP can't learn anything about what's inside of them, so in particular the price and the segments driven. On the sort of honesty standpoint, the soundness of the proof guarantees that these checks will pass only if the price really was in the right range. And this prevents against attacks like, I commit to all my segments honestly, and then at the last one, I commit to negative 100 to try to just drive down my monthly total. And then finally, the binding of the commitment scheme guarantees that when the driver gives the TC this commitment and this opening, that really was the right commitment and the right opening and the value in there all along. I didn't just make something up and give it to you. All right, so this is sort of, again, vaguely why things are working. And remember, our problem that we saw at the beginning of the talk is that revealing this segment directly to the driver can be a bit dangerous. So let's see how we can get around doing that. And this is where Blind IBE comes in, and this is how Milo is built. So we have the same tuples as they do in PrettyP, but we now add on this ciphertext. This is going to be a blind identity-based encryption. The value inside of the encryption is going to be the opening of the corresponding commitment. And the identity that that encryption is for is the segment information where when. Okay, so that's maybe a bit convoluted. Hopefully we'll see kind of why it is like that. So we send that to the TSP. The TSP does exactly what he did before. He just ignores those ciphertexts completely. And he now forwards everything on to the TC. The TC now has a slightly different job. In fact, the audit protocol is just going to be the exact extraction process for the blind IBE that we saw earlier. So remember, the TC saw the driver at a certain segment where when. What they're now going to do is perform the key extraction for that segment. Remember, identities for the blind IBE are segments. And the driver, acting as this key authority, is going to respond with whatever the secret key for that segment is. All right? The TC now has to do a little bit more. So they first, from this value, want to extract the secret key. Remember, we saw that you could do that. The second thing they want to do is now, well, if the driver honestly logged this segment, then one of those encryptions corresponds to it. And so they want to trial decrypt each of these ciphertexts to try to find the right one. Once they find the right one, remember that the value inside of the encryption was the opening of the commitment. And so now, if they can find the right one, then they have that opening. And now they have, remember, everything that we just saw in PrettyP. So they have the commitment, and they have its opening. And they can do the same checks we did before. So first, making sure that that opening is correct. And then second, making sure that that price inside of the opening is the right price. OK. And we do get all of the same crypto guarantees as PrettyP, in particular because we're using the same primitives. But we do get this additional guarantee as well, which is that the blindness of the IBE guarantees that the driver in the process of this audit, which I've covered up part of, doesn't actually learn that segment where when. Okay, so hopefully that made sense. And now what I'll do is, obviously, blind IBE doesn't come for free. So let's kind of see what overhead we're looking at. So first, some details. For the blind IBE, we used the Miracle library developed by Mike Scott. And for the commitments and zero-knowledge proofs, we used ZKPDL, which is just a language that I and my collaborators developed last year. And we also did timing information on two computers, so my laptop here, a MacBook Pro, and also on an ARM V5TE. So the thought process here being that the TC, the Department of Transportation, can hopefully afford computational power of at least my laptop, whereas this ARM V5TE really is an automotive unit. So that represents a reasonable amount of computation for the OBU. And just as a reminder, sort of when are these blind IBE operations happening? When are we adding on this overhead? Well, encryption is happening during the payment process, right? Those ciphertexts are part of the payment. Extraction is the audit protocol now. And then decryption is happening during the audit as well, because the TC is going to need to trial decrypt those ciphertexts. All right, so now I'll just throw some numbers at you. The first are sort of the timings for all of the unit operations in blind IBE. So this creation of parameters, which I didn't really talk about, encryption, both sides of the extraction, and decryption. You can, you know, take what you will from these numbers. One thing I do want to point out is that the cost for the OBU during the audit is at least reduced, right? So essentially, we've shifted all of the computational burden during the audit from the OBU over to the TC. And so now all they have to do is answer this one key extraction query for each audit. In terms of the size of things, again, take what you will. It's obvious that the size of the zero-knowledge proof completely dominates the segment size. I do want to mention that our numbers are not optimized in any way, so I'm fairly confident that with a little bit of work, you could get this number a lot smaller. And then finally, we can see the time for the TC to perform the audit. And here we consider a number of different segments. There's more detail in the paper, but essentially these correspond to just how fine-grained you want your policy to be. And you can also see that the numbers scale linearly with the number of segments, so you can extrapolate, you know, for any number of segments you want. And again, here we can see that the time, the total audit time is just completely dominated by this time to iterate through all of the ciphertexts and trial decrypt. So that's probably not that surprising, but it really is, you know, the overhead beyond iterating and trial decrypting in the whole protocol is like 10 milliseconds, so it's very small. So again, I just want to say, you know, take what you will from these numbers. And in the paper, I won't have time to talk about it, but we do a kind of comparison between using this and using some naive solutions for trying to achieve the same security properties. So pretty much out of time, I'll just wrap up. We presented Milo, our solution for privacy-preserving electronic toll collection. In particular, sort of our main contribution here is identifying driver collusion as this sort of fundamental problem for the security of these systems, and then patching things up with our new audit protocol. And we did this using blind identity-based encryption. We also found that the computational overhead was manageable. And I'll also again say that in the paper we find that it's significantly cheaper than other alternatives. I also just want to briefly mention some potential future work. Really, our paper is sort of an example of the fact that privacy-preserving applications can be very complex, and they have a lot of moving parts. So as such, it's hard to come up with models that really capture every possible attack that you would expect. And so possibly formalizing security definitions and tightening this up would prevent attacks such as these in the future. And then from a more practical side of things, finding cheaper methods than blind IDE for achieving these same security properties could also be very desirable. So thank you so much for listening, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Ask you one not so tough question. One of the things you mentioned was that you do the encryption at audit time. Mm-hmm. Are there ways you could optimize that by not having it done there, having it done when the car is driving around?
Yeah. So the encryption actually we do some, you know, back of the envelope calculations and figure that it can be done in real time. So as you drive, I think it was something like unless you were driving over 150 miles an hour, you could do it in real time. So. You know, that's that.
that's great. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, sorry, one question.
I'll ask a crypto question and a pesky question. Could you do something to avoid the trial decryptions on the server side just by like tagging all of your ciphertext with something that the client reveals when to tell the server which ones to bother decrypting?
It seems very possible that some sort of additional crypto trick could be used to avoid the trial decryption since it's obviously the big bottleneck.
The other more practical question is, how do you build a system like this and actually give the users of the system any confidence about their privacy?
that is much harder, I think. We've sort of been talking about this all conference. I think that it could be done potentially in a place, probably not in the US, maybe in Europe, where people seem to have more confidence in their government. But it's definitely, I mean, I think it's sort of the trouble with any privacy, for example, you know, with voting protocols, right? Sort of how do you say, well, it's crypto, I promise, I'm, you know, that box in your car is not sending me every segment you drive. And I mean, I think it's sort of this great fundamental question that I apologize if I can't answer now, so thanks.
Hi, Rick Farrow. Could you go back to the slide where you had the performance numbers a couple
sure.
slides back?
There it is.
Okay. Is that the one? No, it's the one that where you had the time. Let's see, where you were saying the time to perform an audit. Oh, there it is, yes. So time for the TC to do an audit for 2 miles per 1 hour time steps, and that's 10 seconds, 0.45. Okay. One of the things I was wondering is this is based on there being cameras. So you're assuming, one, that there's cameras every 2 miles or some way of collecting the audit information.
No, sorry. That's not clear. So the only this is just assuming that the length of segments is 2 miles and the sort of time step in that when differential there is an hour, the idea being that you don't care about collecting very fine-grained timing information. So all that's informing there is that we expect the average user to log about 500 segments per month.
I see.
So in particular, the camera could be in any segment they drive in. It doesn't have to be, they don't have to have a camera in every segment, just hopefully in at least one of the segments you drove throughout the month.
All right, yeah, so that sort of kills my next point, which okay. I was thinking you could just randomly audit. You wouldn't have to audit every segment, but since you don't know which one the camera verification is going to appear in, you have to go through
right.
until you find the right segment.
Right, so it would be very bad if we had a camera in every segment, right?
Right.
Because we would kill privacy completely.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that maybe in these 500 segments you're seeing, five of them,
mm-hmm.
So that not too much of your privacy is compromised.
Right, but you still have to decrypt each segment to
yeah,
find
Yeah, so you
those
still don't know
verifiers.
Which segment corresponded. That is
sure.
a fundamental problem right now.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, speaker, again.